is a jazz podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene.
And now you're paid a lot of money for
Rob Cope and Dan Barrett.
That's awesome, man. That's great.
Yeah,
it's this Matt Berry.
It's Matt Berry impression, yeah. But we paid.
UK!
Yeah.
I love that.
We paid a professional voiceover actor.
Oh, that's so great.
Because I pay for the hosting every week.
Okay.
And when I added it up for the year, I was like, hey, Dan, you owe me this money. And he was like, yeah, but I paid for that voiceover for the intro, which was more. So I was like, oh, shit. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Jazz Podcast. This is both an audio and a video show. So if you want to watch what's going on, you can search for the Jazz Podcast on YouTube. We'll be adding some more video shows soon. Or you can stay here and listen, whatever you fancy.
Yes.
All right.
All good.
Lovely. Raph Clarkson, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. We're going to try today and do a video show at the same time. But there's a high risk that because the first video show we did for Richard Turner's podcast was 12 minutes long. This show, don't know how long it will be, but the chances of something not going wrong in the next hour are just so slim.
Well, we can embrace that, maybe.
Embrace
the failure.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting it's going to fail, but
there are two coffees on the table as well, so we're going to be very, very gentle with them.
Yes.
To
avoid that sound.
Exactly. So, Raph, where did you grow up?
I grew up in North London, in Finchley Central, which is kind of suburbs, basically. And went to school very near where I lived, which was very nice. It's near some green space, which was nice, so we could go down to the woods.
Do you know what? Let's pause it for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to put my sock over the Zoom. Okay. And then we'll get to work.
We should keep that in, by the way. I think.
There she is.
Revealed her.
Yeah, the Jazz Podcast is a very high budget operation. All right, we're back. So I'm just going to put my shoe back on. So Finchley.
Yeah.
Nice.
The historical constituency of Margaret Thatcher, of course.
Is it?
Yeah. Sadly.
I try really hard not to talk about politics, but
I mean, that's the defining things about Finchley are, okay, the three things I can think of. Margaret Thatcher's constituency.
Yeah.
The thing that it says on Finchley Central platform is home of the inventor of ink. I think his name was Henry C. Stevens.
I'm surprised he didn't. I'm sort of sad he wasn't called Ink in some way.
Mr. Ink, you mean?
Mm.
Yeah. And the other thing is that a couple of famous people lived there, and including Emma Bunton, aka Baby Spice.
Nice.
And once at our primary school, summer fair, we had a special guest. It wasn't Emma Bunton, it was Emma Bunton's mum.
Wow!
She came and signed autographs.
That's the
So that's Finchley.
That's the real power of the Spice Girls.
People were very excited. They really were. But it was her mum.
Well,
not her.
Did you get something signed that day?
No. I was taking penalties against Barnet FC's third choice goalkeeper.
Wow! Nice!
Yeah, you know.
I used to love playing football as a kid. I remember going on a course once and Kyle Pilkington, Man United's third choice, after Schmeichel and Raymond van der Gaal came for like an hour.
Yeah.
I remember he talked about penalties.
Yeah.
I don't know why I remember this. I must have been about 7 or 8.
Where was it? What was the football?
Somewhere in Cheshire, I don't know. My mum's listening, she'll be able to tell me where it went, because I probably only went to one. But I remember Kyle said, like, right, boys, you know, if you want to save a penalty, what should you do? And my friend was put his hand up and was like, jump up and down, and he was like, no. And I was like, oh, thank God, that wasn't me.
don't want Kyle thinking I'm an idiot. Jump up and down. Yeah. He was like, no, because what if he kicks the ball when you're in the air? And we were all like, ah. I was like, that's why he's the third choice.
Yeah, yeah. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he sure does.
Yeah. I was my primary school's first choice goalkeeper.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. We won the West Barnet Football League when I was in year six.
Wow. That's great. Yeah, yeah. I've never met anyone else that wants to play in goal.
I'm not sure I did. I think it just happened. And then when I got older, I didn't play in goal anymore.
Right.
But I seemed to... It's quite terrifying. I once had a experience on a terrible football pitch where I was... somebody hit a very tame shot and it was away at Dollis Hill Primary School.
Yeah.
I remember this vividly. It was very embarrassing. And I ran backwards and I was bending down to pick the ball up. And there was a divot, and I fell backwards.
Oh, no.
The ball went over my head, and I kicked it in.
Brilliant. Yeah. The only overhead kick you've ever scored.
I mean, it was really very embarrassing.
Well, yeah. I don't mean to gloat. You can't see it in the trees in the background.
Mm.
But there is a light breeze.
There is, yeah. It's very pleasant.
This sock contraption. Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's so good. So let's get down to business. When did you start playing the trombone?
I was 8.
Oh, try not to move your feet, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Everything's connected.
Try not to
it's
fidget.
All wood. Yeah, they just sit really still.
Yeah.
Oh, every time the breeze blows, I feel empowered. Like I've got one over Mother Nature.
Yeah. And anyone who sells equipment.
Yes, people that sell actual equipment.
You could be a
consultant
for...
I could.
You know.
Yeah.
People.
I might buy one of those little things.
You could manufacture your own branded socks.
I like it.
That also function as windshields for microphones.
That's a great idea.
Trombone, yeah, I started playing when I was 8. I think I saw it in a demo at primary school.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough that we had, you know, a music service that came in and taught at primary school.
Would that have been Barnet Music Service?
That was Barnet Music Service. And I was taught by a horn player, in fact.
Was that a bad thing?
She was really great, but I think I developed a bit of a smiley embouchure.
Right.
Which had to be corrected when I was about 7 years later. But
yeah. Was that like first year of music college?
No, that was like when I was 15. Sort of like I was wanting to do music seriously and I couldn't, I had no high register, so I started going to see a trombone player. Well, I had a trombone teacher at school, but my problems were so severe that he put me in touch with a guy called Lindsay Schilling, who's the principal of Covent Garden Opera, amazing cool. trombone player, teacher at the Royal College, and he kind of sorted it all out, so I owe a lot to that. I owe a lot to him.
Yeah.
It's that feeling of when you can't make any more sound because your mouth is falling apart is unpleasant.
Yeah, I get that when I play the trumpet at school and I try and play like more than a range of a fifth.
Yeah.
C to G, I'm all over it, but man, those A's.
Yeah, yeah. I should be better at with the trumpet, but it's the same for me. Just trying to fit my mouth into a tiny trumpet mouthpiece.
Yeah. How do you get... Is it a thing that, like, anatomically, like, physically, are trumpet players and trombone players slightly different?
I mean...
Because there's a trumpet player, Tom Walsh, who lives in London, who has a notoriously small mouth. And
yeah.
He can play very high as a result.
I mean... I don't know, because I've never made the decision for a kid of, like... I think some people, you hear of, like, a thing of seeing, like, oh, that person's mouth is more suited to playing the trombone.
Yeah.
Like, I guess arguably, if you've got basically bigger lips and a bigger mouth, you're going to probably be more suited to a massive mouthpiece, like tuba or the trombone.
Yeah.
And I've definitely taught kids before that, I was supposed to be teaching them trumpet, and you see somebody struggling to make a sound, and it's like, you need to start on the trombone first.
Yeah.
Because then you'll be able to make a sound.
Right.
Even if you go back to the trumpet, you can probably control it to go back. But when you're starting, the kind of thing of a kid getting a hang-up of not being able to make a sound yeah. for the first 2 weeks and getting really stressed about it is such a bad way to start, in a way, because yeah. you get really stressed and you get really tense and you can't
yeah.
make any sound. So I have made that decision for kids of, like, let's try in the trombone for a bit first, because it'll just be easier to yeah. make something happen.
Do you do P-bones, the plastic ones?
I don't. I've always wanted to get one, but I haven't... I haven't taught in a school yet that has them.
I used
Although
to do
I think they're great. I think they're really good.
Sutton Music Service. I used to work Thursday mornings. Mm-hmm. And we did P-bone and clarinet. And the P-bones, they're like 80 quid each.
Yeah.
And they're so light.
And
they sound pretty good.
And they're durable. Like,
yeah.
a kid can smash them around and they'll work.
Yeah.
Well, smash them around.
No, I never saw one break in the three
Whereas,
years I did that project.
You know, beginner metal trombones,
yeah.
brass trombones.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. you give them to a kid who's starting yeah. a week later, the slide doesn't move.
Yeah. I did. Just, yeah. you know, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I did a product review, not a very helpful one, of a polycarbonate saxophone.
Oh, yeah.
On Alex Monk's show.
Oh, right. Does that exist now?
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's a... I would consider it to be quite a substantial failure.
Oh, no.
Because right. they manufacture them in Thailand.
Okay.
And they, or Malaysia, but they didn't factor in import tax into the cost. So it's supposed to be like 200 quid. Which
right.
is the same as like a second-hand bronze saxophone.
Mm.
But actually they're 450 to buy the very worst ones. And so you could spend less money on a bronze sax that would be more in tune. And feel better to play, and it's yeah, just too many yeah. moving parts.
Yeah,
the trombone's great. It's so
yeah,
simple.
It's a perfect thing for that. It's such a perfect mechanism.
Yeah,
perfect instrument
yeah.
in many ways.
Yeah. Only trombonists have ever said that.
Yeah.
Les Chisnell is a pianist. He was my jazz teacher at school. He won't thank me for repeating this, but he just would refer to it as the random note generator. And for quite a long time when I was a kid, I didn't really know what he meant by that. It's like
it's good. It's a good description,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I like that.
Yeah.
It's a good name for an album.
So when did you... yeah. Your album's just come out as well. It will...
About to. Yeah, it will. Yes, it
will.
It has.
Been.
No, it has. Yes,
yeah,
it's come out and
yeah.
great. Yeah, it's done so well.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I mean, yes.
We estimate it'll probably be like
we'll
2 months or 3 months when this gets played.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. How many have you ordered?
I don't know because that decision.
Oh boy.
So, hopefully enough that if people want to buy it, they can get one.
That's good. I've done that before. I've had to take some to the tip.
Oh really?
Because
oh, no.
we've gotten to the point where it was like, well, there's still 940.
It's like them getting pulped like an Alan Partridge, you know, when he gets his foot pulped.
Yeah, yeah, that's the deal. That was very sad.
Yeah.
So when did you realise that the trombone was something you wanted to do with your life?
Well, I was very lucky with music because both my parents are musicians.
What do they do?
My dad is a viola player. My mum... she died 15 years ago, but she was a baroque violinist, and so music was like in the house from a very young age.
Yeah.
And my uncle's a cellist, and I actually started on the cello when I was 4, so for a few years I was playing both instruments, and then I gave up the cello because I was having more fun with the trombone.
Right.
And
that's awkward.
Yeah. Also, it's like carrying two big instruments into school.
Yeah.
Most days, getting a bit much,
yeah.
So I stopped doing that. I don't know. It's a good question because I think I wasn't always sure whether I chose, like, made the decision that I'm going to do music,
yeah,
or it was sort of inevitable because I grew up with it and my parents did it, and partly maybe I needed to live up to the fact that they'd done it, and
yeah.
so this, so I sort of naturally did a lot of it growing up, and then when it came to choosing options, I went to university. I didn't do college. I went to University of York.
I never realised that.
Yeah,
I could have just, like, some very simple googling would have solved that problem.
It's fine. It's all right. It means that we've talked about it now.
Simon Roth was at University of York.
Yeah, that's right. He was a year below me.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm so confused. I thought he was older than you.
No, and Daffith Williams as well, sax player.
Wow.
God,
this is
and
a mess. What years were you at university then?
2005 to 2008.
Right.
Yeah. So I think basically, yeah, I dabbled with the idea of doing some other subjects, but I always thought I wanted, you know, music was the passion.
Yeah.
I guess I just realised when I got to sixth form, like, music is obviously what I'm passionate about, so I'll do it at university and then probably keep doing it. Although yeah. there's sort of all the confidence issues about that were always a bit like, maybe I won't be able to do it, maybe I'll do something else, but in the end, just the fact that I loved doing it,
yeah,
you know, just then carried on doing it, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
So York's created some very important jazz musicians recently.
Yeah.
Is that a coincidence, or is the course?
I don't think it is. In that, so my first year that I arrived, John Taylor started teaching there.
Right.
And that was brought about by a guy called Jonathan Ito, who's the kind of jazz and improvised music and all things related to that lecturer at York. And he brought John Taylor there. And the ensemble in residence, main ensemble in residence, was Julian Arguelles' octet, which meant that he came up, did regular teaching. People in his octet did, so Martin France, Chris Batchelor, Mark Bassey, Nicky Isles, Mike Walker, Ian Dixon. I've probably missed somebody out. Yeah, you know, so John Taylor being there as well, it just, I mean, it meant that I think Daffith Williams, who's a great sax player, I knew from school, I went to school with him as well.
Yeah.
When I was choosing options, he was like, you should come to York, John Taylor's starting here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that attracted some people. There's a pianist called Tom Gibbs. Come across him?
Yeah.
He's based in Scotland, but fantastic pianist. Really, really amazing music and composer and improviser. And I think he went to York specifically to do a master's because John Taylor was there.
Right.
There's a guy called Matt Postal, who's now based in the States, came to York to do a PhD on Kenny Wheeler's music. Because John Taylor was going to be there, and because, you know, so I think there was like a really strong focus on jazz at that kind of time, and it's kind of A, it attracted some people, and B, it meant that when you were there, you could do, you know, I did two modules. A fifth of my degree was doing stuff with John Taylor, basically.
Yeah.
Like jazz performance and composition, and for me, like, I'd always been interested in jazz, but I was kind of classically trained, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
In terms of my years up to that point. And John turned up and was giving us his music and Kenny Wheeler's music. And actually, that was my first real, like, delving deeply into jazz, was that music, not kind of the standard repertoire.
Right.
But, I mean, it was absolutely amazing music to be introduced to for the first time.
Yeah.
So it was, it quickly became what I was doing most of, and when I left, what I was more passionate about doing, I guess. Jazz and improvised music.
Yeah.
It was an amazing place to be, an amazing time to be there with somebody like John.
Yeah, that's
there,
amazing.
You know? Yeah.
You've got to seize these opportunities.
Yeah, while absolutely. You've got them. I mean, it was in a way, for me, it was luck, because I was probably going to go there anyway.
Right.
Actually, no. What? I applied to Cambridge University.
Right.
Probably because I thought, I'd challenge myself. And I didn't get in, and it's the biggest blessing in my life that I went to York.
Yeah. Because there's no John Taylor at Cambridge.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
indeed.
What other subjects were you thinking about doing?
I was thinking about either English or history, which are my other A-level subjects.
Right.
Although, actually, I did... One of the other things that I was sort of really interested in from a very young age was space. Yes. One of your interests.
The jazz podcast might just go out the window now.
one of the first, you know how like three, like when kids get to two or three and they can get totally obsessed with one thing.
Yeah.
For some reason, my dad was very passionate, you know, like interested in space and science fiction and had all sorts of books. And we had this video of basically a journey through the solar system and the various planets and their moons. And I think it was off, must have been made, it was after sort of the Voyager spacecraft had, you know, taken photographs of some of these planets and stuff. And I basically would sit down and watch that through on a loop.
Yeah.
And I could name, apparently at age three or four, I could name all of Saturn's moons by
sight
and stuff. I can't do that now.
No, but, that's amazing.
When we were when I was five or six, me and my dad sat me down and we emailed a NASA astronaut and asked...
Do you remember which one?
I can't. It's probably in the depths of a computer hard drive somewhere. But we emailed this guy and he emailed back. We basically said, what do I need to do to be an astronaut? And he was like, well, you know, this is what I did and you need to study this and you need to do this and stuff. And I was pretty bad at maths and...
I remember that feeling.
I did, but I chose physics AS level.
Right.
Because it was the last vestige of like... If I do this, maybe, if I suddenly change my mind,
that's great.
I can be an astronaut. I stopped at AS because the maths got too hard.
That's what always undid me. Yeah. First, I was never intelligent enough, academic enough. And when we did science at GCSE, we talked about space for about 4 days.
Yeah.
Of 2 years. Yeah. It was just a bit not... My own obsession with it now has become learning Russian.
Okay, nice.
Just because I want to know, this is how big of a nerd it is, I think. I want to know how it's been for all the American astronauts to learn Russian, because you have to learn Russian if you want to fly in space. That's it. But of course, I've not learned any words that are remotely related to a space program.
Okay.
Because I'm on like beginner course 13 on Babel.com.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
It's good though.
Yeah.
It's just on my phone. It's beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Russian alphabet app as well. Look, I have a little folder called Russian.
Oh,
and
that's
just, you know.
What can you say? Can you say something?
I've got I'm doing a lot of beginner.
Can you order
like
a coffee?
No.
Oh.
Pretty disappointing, I know.
Good night.
Let's see. I'll play you some stuff that I know. Here we go. So that's They Are Home.
Ah.
This is like a vocab review. The question is, are you a retiree? It'd be like, Zvi Pinsanya.
Vy Pinsanya?
Get in. I'm just an assistant. Yeah. Assistent?
Я просто ассистент.
I forgot the middle word. Alright, that's bad. You, plural. Zvi.
Вы.
Oh, I'm done. Do you remember these words in Russian?
I like that you know what how to say retiree.
Yeah, they started
that's
you
great.
Off. They start you out with words that are the same in in English.
That makes sense.
Because you have to deal with learning the Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah.
So if you learn all the words that are the same, then you can see how the letters operate.
Yeah.
And it's all phonetic. So once you understand the letters, it's quite easy.
Okay.
Because, like, if you want to spell, well, like your kid in English, I'm going like ra, e, ta, a, ra, e, e, retiree. And then you write it in Cyrillic instead.
Right, okay.
So it's pretty low-level Russian.
Still learning Russian, which is better than not learning Russian.
I want to read like one of Tolstoy's novels in Russian, just to annoy my wife. Because she's much more into literature than I am. That would be the death
blow.
So
that you can say, but yeah, if you read it in Russian,
yeah, you got
then you would
the,
know.
Yeah.
Then you would know that this means this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you finished at York, did you set your sights on London already, or
no?
How did you end up to be here?
What I did was not take a break, which I probably should have, because I was pretty tired by the end of that. I mean,
what is your 3-year course that you did?
Well, it was just intense, and
it was in music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh,
of course it was.
Yeah.
What you're saying about you can't not study music, but then do a fifth of your degree with John Taylor.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, you can't. No, I went to Oxford University and did a master's
cool.
because I think I was kind of underconfident about whether I could become a musician or not as a performing performing musician. And I'd done quite well at the academic side, and so I thought I would go somewhere where I can do both performance and academic stuff to give me the option of continuing. I think I knew I wanted to do a master's.
Yeah.
Reflecting on it, I kind of wish that I'd gone and done a performance master's in Europe or something like that, and done something really, gone somewhere completely new. But I think I wanted to challenge myself academically as well. Anyway, I went to Oxford.
What did you study?
For 2 years. It was an MPhil in musicology, which basically is a master's and then like the first year of a PhD equivalent.
Oh, cool.
And it had like a performance.
I didn't realize such a thing was a thing.
Yeah, it's not that. It's the kind of thing where if you started a PhD and then stopped after a year, that is the qualification you could get.
Right, okay.
But some places offer it as a thing as well.
Yeah.
So
you're slightly better qualified than me.
I mean, I don't know. I'm qualified. Yeah, my thesis was in British trombone performance.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow!
Basically, that was after the first year I wasn't enjoying the academic stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was all about how to do musicology, not actually studying any music. It was like how to, the kind of academic discipline of doing the subject.
Right.
So it's a lot of theory about how to be a musicologist.
Right.
And if you want things to make sense with the real world and like be practical and it relate to actual music, that's not for you. In my opinion.
It sounds like a really hard thing to make relevant.
It is, and it was the kind of thing where I would finish like 5 hours of reading some like really impenetrable stuff and then try and go and practice.
Yeah.
And my brain was fried and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't, you know. So there was a performance at the end of each year, and that was nice. I sort of did a crossover thing with early music and jazz, and I played a bit of sack butt at the time.
Nice. That's like the big round one?
No, that's just the early precursor to the trombone.
No.
Which is, it is a trombone, but it's much, the bell is like that big.
Yeah.
And it's very thin metal.
Right.
And it's like what the trombone was before it got bigger and
before the Americans got their hands
basically,
on it.
Basically, yes. I basically made my second year, which was a sort of research year, into going and interviewing various trombone players from different genre, like styles of music and different disciplines, and thinking about like creativity. So like I always had this, I don't know what you, because you sort of had a classical training and then went into jazz, and my feeling of having, of being at that time, I was like, I've done both of these things, and there's this sort of I don't know, idea that if you're a jazz musician, you're a lot more creative than a classical musician.
Yeah.
Or there's the thing of some classical musicians saying, I can't improvise. Don't ask me, you know, what? No, I don't do that.
Yeah.
Or I can't do that.
Yeah.
And there was some feeling that these things are much more closely related than that kind of stereotype.
Yeah.
So that was part of the reason for that. And then the other reason was to basically go and have loads of lessons with trombone players and film them doing stuff and transcribe what they were doing and interview them. So that's what my second year was about. So I'm qualified in talking about some trombone players. But it was good. It was like, it made it much more practical and relevant.
Yeah.
Because by then I realised I want to make music.
Yeah.
That's what that year of doing academic hard stuff was
that's
like.
What it did
I don't
to
want
to
do that. Yeah. I want to make music. So
yeah.
And so then I came to London after that. Yeah.
After Oxford.
Mm.
What did you do then when you got here? How do you slide into musical society, essentially?
Yeah. I was lucky in that my family home was still in North London, so I could live at home. conscious sense.
Very practical.
Very.
It's actually cheaper to move back here than it would have been to be anywhere else.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that was very lucky.
Yeah.
Really lucky. And I think I... So one of the things that was just sort of starting to do a lot of stuff was World Service Project.
Yeah.
It's the band that I've played in since about 2009.
Such a good name. Who called it that?
It's a bone of contention, you see, because I think I decided that was should be the name, and Tim Au, the sax player, thinks that he decided that should be the name.
It just sounds so official. It sounds like somebody from like a government organisation named it. Like, why don't you guys go and serve the world musically? Whenever I see that, I'm like, oh man, this is such a big deal.
It's,
you know,
what it. It came because Dave Moorcroft, who's the band leader and writes the music and initiated the band, his dad is a sound engineer and worked freelance, used to work freelance for the BBC.
I forgot this is
it's
on
all
video.
Right, it's fine. I think it's more entertaining.
Well, you're telling me all this really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's slowly dozing off. Oh my God, it's 10:28 and the four coffees are causing a kind of a slide.
Yeah. Or maybe we need more caffeinous ones.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know. Is it the coffee dip?
I think I'm dipping. Oh my God. Sorry, go on.
No, that's all right. So when we, basically, he managed to get us, I don't think, I mean, the World Service has been sort of destroyed now by our current government, so they probably won't be around to hear this, but he managed to get us a little bit of time in a BBC World Service studio to just to record a bit of our stuff under the auspices of training, audio engineer training or something. So we just made a little sort of demo slash album.
Yeah.
And the way that I tell the story is that we got the CD and Dave's dad wrote World Service Project, as in the project that we did in the World Service. And I think I said, oh, that would be a really good name for the band. Yeah. And then it stuck. And I think Tim, our sax player, thinks that he said that. But anyway, that's why the band is called The Band, because the first thing we did was make a little demo of Dave's
music. That's awesome. What a great
reason.
In the
BBC World Service.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it just sort of stuck. And, yeah.
That's cool.
But that's what, there was a lot of that going on when I came back to London. So, which was great, because it was a creative project to really be, you know, get your teeth stuck into. And there was we were doing a lot of organising stuff, because at that time we started initiating these exchange tours with other bands from Europe, which is what Match and Fuse is now.
Right.
So Match and Fuse is the sort of European touring network and festivals around Europe, and it kind of started as with us going on tour with a Norwegian band in Norway,
right,
and then doing the same in the UK.
Amazing.
And then that just spiraled, and Dave, you know, who's an amazing sort of initiator of things and works so hard, basically pushed this further and further, and it is now this big thing.
Wow.
But that was going on at the time, so there was a lot to sort of get stuck into, and I started doing bits of teaching and stuff, and it was like very, you know, piecemeal bits and pieces of like some gigs, and you start playing in a function band, start playing in a salsa band a bit, and then started running some workshops with my friend Phil Merriman.
Yeah.
Who was in my year at York.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness me. The web gets wider and wider.
Indeed.
Crumbs.
So yeah, it was like, I mean, I was lucky because I was living at home, so I could sort of take my time to start to put the things together, and then somehow you arrive at a point where you can move out, out, and, you know, keep doing things.
Wow. So what's going on now?
Now it's like a mixture of...
What's your band's that's the album's just come out?
It's the Dissolute Society.
Right.
And that is it's like three strings, two horns, vocals, drums, keys, guests, piano.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I'd wanted to do something, my own creative project, like probably since I left uni, but had never had the confidence or, you know, like realised, have the focus. You know, you have lots of little ideas and then you never see them through.
Yeah.
And I based, we were talking about this earlier, this thing of like focus on what you are good at and what you know and what's authentic to you.
Yeah.
I realised that I wanted to do some things that were to do with personal family stories and stuff. Yeah. So that's what the music's about. Oh, wow. That's what gave me the drive to sort of make it happen, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's that, trying to make that happen. And then I do a lot of like creative workshops, workshop leading.
Oh, look at the wind.
Oh. At
that. That's very, it's very beautiful.
Yeah, it is. Can't hear a thing, though. I am going to patent this sock. This is brilliant. Stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, so like it's a mixture of playing the trombone and doing workshop leading. And,
yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
Community music projects and stuff. Which is fun. It's good. Yeah.
Have you got any plans?
Plans?
Yeah. Music or life plans?
Music or life plans.
For the next year.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of had a flurry of, I don't know, when you start making a project of your own and it starts to go somewhere, then I don't know if you found this, but you start to think, oh, I could also do this thing and that would be exciting, so you initiate that thing and then that thing, and
yeah,
so I've sort of initiated a few different things that
I like. The idea of this like button that you press at home, it's like initiate project, and you're like, oh no, I pressed it now, that's it,
it's kind of
it's initiated. So I've got to do something now.
I started a thing with Kieran McLeod, the trombonist, which is like a free, in fact we've almost done it a few times with you.
Ooh.
It's called Speckles Brass,
right,
and it's basically a brass septet of, it's just freely improvised music.
Oh, that sounds great.
And
you do that once at the Phil Merriman's brother John Merriman studio.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah,
I was busy then as well.
Yeah,
that was a kick in the teeth.
But we'll do one. But like the idea with that was, I was speaking to Kieran and we were both like, really want to play some freely improvised music and do something, you know. And so we just made a little recording and then have done a gig every now and then with it. And it's been really nice because we've always done it with a guest. So we've done one with Joe Wright, and we've done one with Julie Kier, and Mia Marlenberg, who's a Norwegian vocalist, and we've done one with some dancers. And it's a nice thing just to do occasionally, and very fulfilling. And like, I'd love to, we want to do something with Keith Tippett.
Cool.
Who I met when I was, that was the other jazz history thing for me, was I met when I was 8 or 9. So my parents used to teach on the Dartington Summer School course, and he taught there.
Yeah.
So I got to, you know, got to go along and do Keith Tippett's jazz course, aged 8. Which was cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so there's like trying to make that happen. And I'm also doing a project of trying to delve into South African jazz.
Oh, cool.
With Adam Glasser.
Yeah.
He's an amazing pianist and harmonica player, and, you know, played with all the, you know, basically toured with people like Dudu Bukwana and Chris McGregor and, you know, like knew all those guys when he came to the UK in the 70s.
Yeah.
And the plan is to, like, just like immerse myself in that music with people who really know it here. It's basically him and people like Chris Batchelor, who, you know, knows that music really well, and Gareth Lacrane as well.
Yeah.
And then maybe go to South Africa and try and just play with people and,
you know,
and do some workshops and stuff. So that's the sort of, the plan is to make, is to devote some time to those projects and make them happen, I guess. What other, I mean, if I lived in a flat where I could have it, I'd love to have a dog.
Yeah.
But I live in a set, you know, first floor flat, so I can't,
that's a nightmare.
Or a cat, really.
Yeah. Well, I got a cat in a first floor.
Oh yeah.
Called George.
Oh.
Yeah. But he's a rag doll. They're house cats. They're too docile and friendly to go outside. So I didn't want to.
How does he do you have, how
yeah, go on. Go on, I can
how
edit.
How does he use the facilities? Do you have a litter trained.
Yeah, very okay. well. He's okay. really well trained.
Oh, good.
Although this morning, Claire got up and the first thing she said to me, Rob, there's poo on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he...
I was like, that's a shame.
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah, so occasionally there's malfunctions, there's okay. problems.
But that's... Oh, yeah, I've seen... Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, he's got blue eyes. He
blue,
looks like...
sparkling
he's
eyes.
The cat version of Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Cameras picked that up really well.
What did you? Who did you name him after?
Sorry if you're listening and not watching this show because I'm just holding a picture.
There's probably,
of George.
I mean, at this point, camera. You could probably Rob will, you know, put up a little, yeah. you know, put a little, you know, one of those little tags on the yeah. podcast, and yeah. his picture will come up. Yeah,
ooh,
you're gonna do that. Yeah?
Yeah, that's nice. That'll give me something
don't,
to do.
Don't you don't worry if you don't do that. It's fine.
I'm sure the one person that's watching. And the three that are listening are all really confused by this at this point. We named him George just because Claire liked that name.
Okay.
But for me, animals with human names is like a thing that just always
tickles
me.
I think that is really funny.
I just love
it. If I want to name my a cat, if it's female cat,
yeah.
I want to name her Jane.
Lovely.
I think that, I don't...
Yeah, that's nice.
It's sort of incongruous because it's not a cat name, it's
yeah.
a very human name.
Yeah, it's great.
And I like that.
I love that too, yeah. That's great.
So that's my aim.
Yeah, that's the
cat
I love it,
Jane.
That's what's coming up
yeah.
in your life.
Yeah, at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, we got lucky, our landlords just let us have him, and then we bought this flat. But,
cool.
Yeah. It's like having a baby.
Yeah.
Last night, he just wouldn't go to bed. He's just messing about, he just doesn't
understand.
Sleep
on your bed?
Yeah. He sleeps on Claire's pillow.
Oh.
Like a crown, like around her
around
head.
Around her head,
yeah.
Wow.
Because she's cool. warm, I guess.
Yeah.
He's not, there's no love. He just loves warm stuff.
Well, my dad, we had a cat growing up that was the same age as me.
Yeah.
Called Pushkin.
Yeah.
That's but it was a she.
Pushkin.
Yeah, it's
wow.
a good cat name.
We've been thinking about naming something Pushkin.
It's a good cat name.
We went to Russia last month.
Oh.
And
cool.
there was a Pushkin cafe.
Because yeah.
Pushkin was an artist, I think.
Poet, I think.
Poet!
Yes.
Trying to look really clever. Pushkin was a poet.
Yeah.
And, yeah, now whenever the word push is in the vocab, there's like, Rob, you have to Pushkin that door.
Oh.
But, yeah, we slip it in a lot. But,
it's a good cat name.
Yeah, yeah.
But she used to sleep on my dad.
Right.
And once he woke up and she had... You know how cats sort of do that thing where they lie down but with their feet, this is going to be again
yeah.
useless for people listening, they lie down with their feet like
yeah.
that, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and like flat,
yeah,
she want my dad once woke up and her belly was on his head, on his face. She was just sort of like, you know,
wow, that's
so
amazing.
There's that thing of cats also being very obsessed with their human masters' shoes,
yeah.
I don't know if your cat does this, but our cat used to bury her head in my dad's shoe.
Wow, that's interesting.
It was something very... She needed
that. He's never done that.
Yeah.
He likes to know where I've been whenever I get home. There's a lot of sniffing.
Okay. Yeah,
excuse me. Probably just blew somebody's eardrums. yeah, there's a lot of sniffing, especially if I've been swimming. He's really into the chlorine. He's like, what the hell is this? I have a question for you.
Yes.
If you could have a tube station...
Yeah.
Come out anywhere in town, where would you want to be connected to?
Is this a place where there isn't a tube station?
Is no, there can be a tube. What I mean specifically is that it's a express, it's like the Waterloo and City
oh.
line. So it just goes from your house
oh, man.
To somewhere. No stops.
Oh, that's a good question.
There's so much choice here because it's so damn
so
big.
There's so much choice. Yeah, oh, I'm going to have to think about that a bit. I mean, probably... I think somewhere, like, in town that... I'll tell you what I really like doing if ever I've been out of London and I come back and go to, like, Waterloo Station is walking over the Hungerford bridges, the white bridges that connect the South Bank Centre.
I love that bit of walk.
So I think
yeah, that feels so London.
Yeah, I like
the river,
this is why I like living in London because
yeah.
you feel
yeah.
you know, basically in the heart of the city.
Yeah.
So probably to there.
Yeah.
Even though I mean,
that's what Dan says.
Yeah.
South Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That little area, it's just
yeah.
kind of it's a good atmosphere. It's always a joyful, positive atmosphere, I think.
Totally.
Yeah, so I'd say there. Nice. I'd say, if it's possible, can I go to the centre of the bridge on the... You know,
yeah,
how
definitely.
That
like,
Charing Cross...
the Jubilee line runs underneath anyway.
Yeah, but and, so and the Charing Cross line actually goes over
goes
the bridge
over the
there.
Bridge.
So if there could just be a little...
Yeah.
Sort of, I'm at the moment for the listeners. I'm I'm doing a little
a swirl
curve onto the bridge, so that there's a little.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, that would be great.
That'd be nice.
Yeah,
that'd
be cool. Yeah. Well, Raph Clarkson, thank you so much for coming.
It's a pleasure
on the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Thank you. You have been listening to the Jazz Podcast. 2 weeks' time, we will be talking to Henry Lowther. But in the meantime, here is an absolute beauty from Raph Clarkson's Old Bone Band.
Do I want you, oh my, do I, honey, indeed I do. Do I need you, oh my, do I, honey, indeed I do. I'm glad that I'm the one who found you. That's why I'm always hanging round you. Do I love you? Oh my, do I, honey? Indeed I do. That's why I'm always hanging.